How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Mm-hmm. Pretty excited. Got a retreat this week with some of the high schoolers, like heading up to the Prescott area.
Oh, that'll be good.
On Wednesday, come back on Sunday, so that'll be nice. Looking forward to freezing my backside off, but it'll be great.
Well, yeah, actually, it's going to drop temperature like crazy this weekend, huh?
Yeah, it's supposed to. Like, we hit 90-something down here in Phoenix today, but then it's back to, like, actually just 80 for the high.
Yeah.
And if it's 80 here...
Well, it's breaking. So, like, I'm in Pine right now recording, and I think I have a little bit of an echo. So if I sound weird, it's because I'm not recording in my normal place. And I think coming the weekend, the high's only going to be like 50 or 60 or something like that up here. So it might be cold when you head up there, at least in the mornings and nights, right? Like middle of the day, it'll still be warm in the sun, yeah. But it'll be toasty during the day, but pretty cool at night for sure. Oh man. All right. Let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledew podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, have you had anything good to drink? Has it been a week, 2 weeks? How long has it been?
I mean, I've had...
Just one week, I think.
It's only been 2 weeks this time, because we only had the one highlight rather than a two-parter.
Got it.
But I've had some good things to drink, but it's mostly been things that I have had and we've discussed fairly recently. You know, like I had 805 that was decent. Mm-hmm. I've been on... Sunday, watching some football, I poured myself a little whiskey, a thing called Campfire. It's like a bourbon / rye type thing. It's actually really nice, and I really enjoy it. But yeah, no, nothing too adventurous or exciting.
If you're looking for not adventurous or exciting, Fry's has coupons, I think, for 805, for... Fat Tire, and for Kona, but they're like $5 coupons. So like Kona, like if you like their IPA, it's nothing special.
Wow.
But it was on sale for like $11 and then a $5 coupon. So you could get a 12 pack for $6 basically. Like super serviceable IPA, you know, like you're not going to write home about it, but for $6, like 50 cents a can, like hard to beat. No, but I actually...
Yeah, no, that's a screaming deal.
Yeah, I actually got to try something. I was excited because I literally just went to a brewery like a couple of hours ago before coming up here. So I'm in Pine, and we got to go to that brewery. So that's the name of the brewery, that, THAT. So I was laughing. My daughter was like, what brewery are you going to? We're going to that brewery. Which brewery? That brewery.
I was going to say, it sounds like an Abbott and Costello who's exactly. on first bit, just waiting to happen.
Tell
me that all their beers are named that as well.
Should be
that IPA.
That IPA.
That stout.
Oh, man. I'm almost a little sad that you came up with Abbott and Costello, and I was thinking, dude, where's my car? Like, I feel like I'm a little behind on the culture front. But anywho.
Well, to be fair, you say you're a little behind. I'm the one who's running like 60 years further into the past on it. But
but
one of us is 40, one of us isn't. And the not 40-year-old is the one...
Reaching back to the black and
white, back to the 1940s.
and so that brewery, we had some of the food was pretty good. We had some truffle fries, which were super awesome. And then
nice.
We had an elk burger. That was one of the interesting things is that they had elk on the menu. Like you could get elk as just like their regular menu, which is not a normal thing.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
And then me and Kristen did like a sampler. So like a flight of 6 beers. And so they had they called it a Doppelstick. And I was like, is that just like a Doppelbock? but like you're naming it funny. And the server just looked at me and she said, no, it's just a German style beer. And I was like, okay, I've never heard of that before, but I'll just, I still don't think that's the real name. I got to look it up. But so we had that, we had an IPA, we had a strawberry blonde, an amber, and then they had something called like the AZ Trail. So their strawberry blonde is the one they're really known for. And then the AZ Trail was like, okay, they said their flagship one. And that one was by far the most complex beer that they had. It was kind of an amber, but it was pretty resiny. And a couple of them were pretty carbonated. Like it was, I can't say that it was my favorite beer, but it was by far the most complex in flavor and interesting. And then, the Doppel was decent. You know, everything else was decent. You know, and if you were up here, because there's nothing up here, there's like four restaurants for the most part. Pine is super small still. Like it's a great spot. It's a dog friendly patio. The food is good. The weather is beautiful. Like you can't complain about anything. But you know, like I wouldn't say that the beer was like the best beer I've ever had. But the situation that I was in was fan freaking tastic, and the beer was not bad enough to make me, you know, not go back every time I come up.
So as a destination, it's top notch, and as a beer, it's all right.
Yeah, I think that's right. That sums it up perfectly, I think.
Okay. So like if you were to see them, some of those same beers on sale at your local grocery or liquor store, it's going to be like if the price is comparable to the other okay things, you might
grab it. Sure, you might support local type of a thing. Yeah. And so the strawberry blonde is the one that they mostly have in cans everywhere. So like you can get those, I think, at Fry's and the other grocery stores where it's kind of got like the girl with the red hair on the can. I'm sure you've seen it if you haven't had it already.
Yeah.
And it's just a light, it's a blonde with just a little bit of strawberry in the nose. And so it's not fruited enough for you to be like, oh, this is weird, but it was nice enough, you know? So like you said, good, not great. But when you're up here, it's fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
So
I get that.
Yeah. All right, so I wanted to pose a question because I've been working through something, and I don't know if this is ever going to come to light. I need to follow up with the guy. So I was working with the spiritual director at the church my family's going to right now, and I was like, hey, man, I want to like teach a class. I want to do something. Like we don't have any sort of – I started pitching it as a formation class. I was like, look, the Catholic Church has an RCIA program in which you basically vet somebody before they get baptized. They know what they're doing. You can confirm all of these things. I was like, do we have anything like that? They're like, no, but we should. And I was like, yes, we should. And so they they started going through and I started just working through them. And I didn't land on that because baptism is kind of belongs to like the head pastor and he owns all that. He's like, I can't really like do anything on that. He's like, when it comes to formation though, he's like, that I can do kind of whatever I want. So why don't you start working on like a historic, because that was my other pitch, was like a historical let's start building a historical context to our faith because Protestant churches don't have that. And a lot of them don't understand where a lot of this came from. And, you know, like let's kind of build on their shoulders a little bit more. And he liked the idea. And they're working on spiritual disciplines. And so like after I did all of this, I started working through basically the Story of Theology book by Olson, kind of came with like a 4-week class. And through all of it, I was like, you know what, if you're going to work on spiritual disciplines next year, like let's look at doing this as theology as a spiritual discipline, like wrestling with God, like prayer, philosophy, thinking, like these are things that shouldn't just be like the ivory tower people. Like common people should be thinking and considering and wrestling with the things of God, not just pastors and priests and things like that, right? Everybody should do, not to the same degree, but like a little bit, right? Like you should wrestle as a normal person. You should be able to be like, why do you think Jesus is God? Well, if you haven't spent any time wrestling with that question, like that's a hard one to answer.
Definitely.
You know, so I was kind of working on that and said, okay, let's take theology as the spiritual discipline and let's do this. And I was just going to like kind of host a 4-week class where I was using history as the context and using like thought-provoking questions on why do you believe these things, and had discussions and all of this stuff. And there was one of the pieces that I came to, and I just kind of like I kind of got stuck, and I believe it, but I couldn't articulate it clearly. And that was on the creation ex nihilo, right? And the yeah. the biggest thing was the reason why I got stuck is the whole water at the beginning of Genesis. And so I don't know, have you chewed on this at all? Like, has anybody asked you, like, well, if it was creation from nothing, why is there water when God is creating the earth or whatever, you know? So it's oh, sure. it seems more like God is creating from chaos in Genesis 1 instead of creating from nothing.
Yeah, so part of the, I mean, look, short version in response to your actual question, yes, I've definitely had similar things brought up to me before and have like definitely had to wrestle with it a little bit myself. I will say one of the things that I think can cause some of the confusion for us is that we've got two creation stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Genesis 1, and it goes into the first few verses of Genesis 2, and then like the rest of Genesis 2. And they're not like fundamentally in conflict with one another.
Right.
There are some things where like the order of creation isn't exactly the same.
But you'd expect that with an oral tradition for thousands exactly. and thousands of years. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and also with the idea that, like, ultimately they're both teaching us different things about God and his creation. Mm. You know, the first chapter is, like, the big picture. Like, here are the broad sweeping strokes in which God, over the course of these six events, these 6 days, creates everything and then chills out on the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
And then in chapter 2... you know, it's very kind of micro-focused. Like, most things are already created. God creates man. Man being alone is bad. God creates animals seeking a partner for man. All of them are insufficient. God creates woman from man's rib. They are partners and have dominion over creation. You know, like, so it's zoomed in really on what was day 6 of chapter 1.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are, you know, you would expect there to be some differences. Like, when you're trying to give someone the big picture overview of something, and then you go, like, super zoomed in and give the details on something else. Look, when I was giving you the big picture, these were the key ideas. I wasn't going to spend a lot of time distracting you with this.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple of little differences there. But I think... like when you look at chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, which I did pull up in advance since I knew that this was the topic tonight, even within just the first story, we get some confusion on it. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form or shape, with darkness over the abyss and a mighty wind sweeping over the waters. Okay, now hold on a second. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form or shape, with darkness over the abyss and a mighty wind sweeping over the waters. You're right. There does seem like there's some confusion here. Is God creating the heavens and the earth, or is God rearranging them?
Right, right. Yes, that is the question. Yes.
And to me, when I read this, as far as, like, how is it possible to still believe that this is ex nihilo when it's talking about the earth was without form or shape?
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think I'm kind of relying on just that sequence that's there.
Yeah,
in the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth. So God has created the heavens and the earth. But at this point in the story, they've just been created.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have form. There is no shape. And there's just this darkness over the abyss, over the seas, over the waters, and a wind sweeping over it.
Mm.
But those things were still created in verse 1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth.
Okay. Yeah.
And to me, yeah, like the way I read it is kind of like in a Shakespearean play, the first thing that happens is that the stage is set.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they don't give you the step-by-step of the stage being set. Because the things that are on the stage, their importance is going to be made known as the play progresses. And so, like, there's no way for Shakespeare to start his play by describing, you know, the Globe Theater, for example.
Yeah.
Because that's the context that it has to happen in for the audience to be able to understand. Like, it needs that already. Similarly, the author of Genesis 1 is talking to us about the creation, have you ever tried to explain what nothing is?
Yeah.
Because it can't be done.
Right.
Like, literally, everyone listening to this right now, I want you to take just a second and picture nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do it? No, you didn't. Because you pictured darkness, which is a thing. You pictured space, which is a thing. And so, like, yep. The author doesn't have a way to describe what things were like when it is just God prior to the beginning of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has to kind of take for granted, God has created the heavens and the earth. And now I'm going to tell you how he made them like they are.
Yeah.
Compared to when he just made them and they existed.
And they kind of are jumping in and the point that matters in the story. Because, like, right. God could have, you know, formed stars, and then he could have done this, and then he said planets, and then, you know, like, maybe God just, like, clapped his hands and that's where we got the Big Bang, you know? Like, we can make up all kinds of stuff, but, like, it doesn't really matter to us humans because our point in the story starts when God is forming the earth. And I just never really, you know, as soon as you read that verse out loud, I was like, boy, I should have spent a little more time on the Bible verse and a little less time in the book where the people were arguing over whether it was, you know, ordering chaos or creating ex nihilo. Because, yeah, the sequence there, I think, is the right thing. It's just this stuff with, hey, we did all of this background work, but, like, that's background work. Like, it's not the primary focus of the story. The primary focus of the story is salvation of man, or, like, you know, the story of Christ and everything that starts in Genesis and goes all the way through Revelation. Like,
yeah,
just the important
parts. It's the story of, so when I'm teaching my freshman scripture class, what I keep trying to, like, stress to them is that, like, in order to understand what the Bible is, we also have to understand what it isn't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, the Bible isn't written as a primarily historical text. The Bible is not written as a science textbook. Neither God's purpose nor the human author's purpose, who he inspired to write it, neither of them were setting out to, you know, explain gravity.
Mm-hmm.
What they set out to do was to explain the history of the covenant relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That promised relationship between God and his people. And so for that story, what they don't need is God speaking into existence the first atoms.
Yeah.
And then space, like, the detailed play-by-play of how over the millennia these atoms, like, combined and exploded and all of these different things happened and the Big Bang happened when God clapped his hand or anything like that. Like, none of that, all of that is human curiosity. Things that, oh, you know what? We know enough kind of scientifically now to have some questions about these things. And it's a curiosity. And there's nothing wrong with it unless that idle curiosity distracts us from what it is attempting to tell us, which is that everything that exists exists because God created it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That without God, there is nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, and I'm not trying to, like, open a rabbit hole for us to go down to, but, like, this is also some of the, like, these are some of the traps that can happen when you fall into, like, sola scriptura, which, like, I'm an all-Bible person, right? Like, don't get me, like, let's anything here. Not that you would. I'm just talking to, like, anybody who might listen
right,
to this.
Right, right. But, to the general audience.
Yeah. But, you know, like, I've picked up my book from Athanasius again, and, you know, like, they were just working with such a depth of considerations from so many other sources and so many people in the and tradition and the, what their teachers taught them. And if we just kind of shed everything and we're just looking at periods and commas and things in the Bible, then we can easily end up in the wrong spot. And I think that's kind of what I what I did. And I think that's actually the heresy that they were talking about was, you know, they were using scripture like kind of alone and arguing that mm-hmm. just purely on the language of Genesis 1:1, you know, like, yeah. no, God did this, no, God did that, and now we're fighting. And so there's a lot of stuff that we need to consider along with the Bible.
Definitely. And I think, I'm far from an art critic. And so, anyone out there who's far more artistically and culturally aware than I am can feel free to correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure, wasn't it like Monet, who's like one of the big impressionist painters? Mm-hmm. And like, there's value in going to the museum and seeing a Monet painting and getting up close and looking at those, like they're not even really strokes, but those dabs yep. with the brush that yep. he uses to paint his picture. There's value in getting up close and seeing that because there is an artistry in the detail. Mm-hmm. There's a beauty and significance in the detail that is worth examining. However, the picture itself
yeah.
only makes sense from a distance.
Yeah, you have no clue when you're up. But like I had to go way back and then like cross my eyes in order to like for the picture to be processed by my brain.
Sure. I mean, like from right up next to it, like it, granted, no museum in the world would let you get close enough to do this. But if you had your nose up against that painting, mm-hmm. it would not be significantly different than you remember those like old magic eye posters.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get up close, like cross your eyes. Images in there,
you
got to
cross your eyes and squint just right and stare at it for 45 seconds until your eyes lose their ability to focus. And then, and only then, will you see this weirdly like 3D image. I feel like that's what happens with us a lot of times when we get too mm-hmm. hyper-focused on the details of the scripture.
I think that's right.
There's nothing wrong with focusing on those details. Like there is, again, value in every verse in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. And we should be looking at them. We should be familiar with them. But again, when Christianity began, when it became its own religion, when we realized that we were, yes, the fulfillment of the Jewish faith, but no longer a continuation of it. Mm-hmm. Like we weren't going to be able to,
yep.
you know, when the early Christians found themselves no longer welcomed at the synagogues right. and started going with the home churches and things like that, or down in the catacombs. When that was going on, they didn't get rid of the Old Testament.
Yep.
You know, the Old Testament was kept because of the beauty that's in it. However, they also understood that how they read the New Testament was different now. Everything they read in the Old Testament was now read through the lens of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Like, even in this story of Genesis and creation, when God is saying, let us, and he's speaking in this plural first person, you know, there's nothing wrong with the ancient interpretation of that being God speaking like a royal we, mm-hmm. like the yep. conveying the authority and the power of God. Absolutely. Totally legitimate. However, in the Christian understanding, we're also able to look at it and see, oh, but this, it's not just a royal we. It's also our image, the image of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings to light this idea that even when it was just Adam who had been created, even then, he was created for community mm-hmm. because he was created in the image and likeness of the Trinity.
Right, right.
Of three united as one. And so if that's the image he's created in, he's created for community.
Mm-hmm.
Even when a human community was not an option, that was still always part of his creation and part of his nature.
Yeah.
And so when we're looking at this idea of creation ex nihilo, for example, it's incredibly important, in part because it's one of the unique things in the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes. no other mythology, no other mythos had creation out of nothing. Like, yep. there's a battle between gods who already existed, and the god who is destroyed becomes, his body becomes what Earth is made out of, and stuff like that
yep.
is the norm.
Always something from nothing or ordering something else into something new. It was
yes.
very human, you know, like it's what we do.
Yeah. It's sub-creation Subcreation is the furthest that the human imagination could go.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is no human parallel to the idea of true creation, to the idea of I looked at an empty space and I desired that that emptiness have something in it and something came there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it is, it's an important revelation about the idea, you know, every religion that has gods who are powerful, but they weren't actually all powerful.
Right.
They were comic book characters way ahead of their time. They were superpowered humans. This creation, Ex Nihilo, is at the very beginning identifying for us that God is not us, but better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, it's this idea of who's created in whose image.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's crazy?
In ancient mythology, the gods are created in the image of humans.
Right.
And right. Human desires and human wants and human powers magnified to the utmost.
Oh, man.
In the Judeo-Christian tradition, instead, we have man is created in the image of God. Like, here's a perfection that is beyond our understanding.
Yep. Dude, and like, I'm like jacked right now because I started reading To the Heathen by Athanasius. So it's like a response to the Greeks saying that, you know, criticizing Christianity. And he basically starts with creation and then works through how we corrupted ourselves and how... So, like you're saying with the gods being in the image of man, like Zeus and these guys, like they had good and bad in them. So, like, yes. They could not be good because nothing good can have evil in it or have a result that is evil. And so, like, creation ex nihilo basically establishes that everything is from God and that God has an order to these things. And then when you say, why is there evil? It's because you are not in this order of things. Like, you've desired something different than what is good, and from that mm-hmm. desire came a result that was bad, you know, like, and so creation ex nihilo really, one, it establishes that God is God. There is nothing else more. So, like, where there was equal, like dualism, where there was an equal good and evil, you know, battling, but they would never beat each other, like, he did the same thing Lewis did, where they were saying, like, okay, well, whatever is separating them would have to be another third god that was neutral, that kept the good and bad at bay so that they weren't constantly intermingling and destroying themselves and destroying, you know, like there's all of these logical things that come into play when you have this stuff and you're like, well, you can't really do that. Like, it's either kind of an all or nothing game, like if you really push it all down. But it also, it drills down into, and if I was going to say into my life lesson, the reason why considering creation ex nihilo is that it informs our morality in a way that I didn't consider. And I don't know that I completely have it fully fleshed out, other than the fact that if God is good and God created everything, so from him, in order for God to be good, everything from him must also be good. And so we see that there is order, and if God created, it is good, and there is order, then to be in that good, you would be holy, right? Like, you would be in communion with God, and there would be no sin or evil. And so if you say, hey, why is there evil? Why am I suffering? Then the natural conclusion is that I am not in that order, which was created by the good God and has no suffering, right? Like, that's my logical, just kind of quickly break going down through it, and creation ex nihilo is kind of that point that says, hey, this informs our decision making, our morality, our ethics, and says, you know, what should we do? And the question is not what should we do or what we think is good for us, but what is the good order that God created, and how do I become part of that?
Yeah, I think there's a huge part of ex nihilo is kind of what makes the idea of objective morality possible.
Yeah.
Because it shows that there is one source of all things. And so that source is able to know what is right and what is good for all that it's created. As opposed to, again, if it's a rearranging, then, well, actually this quote-unquote creator isn't actually responsible for these things. And so doesn't necessarily have any sure insight into what they are, what they're for, and what will bring them joy.
Yeah.
What will actually bring them that satisfaction, that completion of harmony. Hmm. And so I think that's a really good point, and not one that had, like, not a connection that I had, like, consciously made. Like, as you were talking about it, there were a lot of kind of, like, oh, yeah, you know what, that tracks with this, this, and this that I kind of already knew, but it wasn't an explicit connection in my mind until you said
it. Yeah, me either, until I actually read it maybe, like, 4 hours ago in my book. I'm not going to lie, like, I'm taking a lot more credit than I should.
Nah, man. Look, again, we're sub-creators, man. These ideas are already out there. True. We're just rearranging That's them true. And moving them around. For me, and it is kind of similar to that, but also very different. For me, I think my big takeaway is on the idea of our understanding. And so in the Catholic Church, we talk about this idea of the seamless garment. Mm. This idea that all of God's revelation, scripture, the natural world, appropriate use of human reason, like actually directed to truth. All of these things, there's like this seamless garment where they will all be in harmony with one another because there's only one truth. And so if it's true, it's true. And when we're looking at this idea of creation ex nihilo, it really kind of brings to mind, again, that idea of, yeah, there's beauty in the details, but in order to really recognize the fullness of that beauty, we need to be able to zoom out and see its mm-hmm. place in the bigger, in the complete picture, or at least as complete as we're able to.
Right, right.
And so, like, there is definitely room for, like, sincere, honest, good faith disagreement about whether chapter one of Genesis describes creation ex nihilo or not.
Mm-hmm.
If we're only looking at Genesis chapter one. But, like, literally everything else in the scriptures make it very, very clear
mm-hmm.
that there was nothing until God made it so.
Right.
You know, whether we're looking at in the book of Job, where God is, like, laying out for Job, oh, okay, cool, you want to question me. Fine, let me question you. Tell me about how this happened
mm-hmm.
or how these stars are governed or, like, all of the things that God did and laid out. Or the Gospel of John, that prologue at the intro, like, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And all that came to be came through the Word, and nothing came to be without him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So we can argue about ex nihilo looking at Genesis chapter 1, but you can't argue about ex nihilo in the context of, you know, Revelation.
Right.
And so the danger for us becoming taking something that we find interesting and fascinating and we're curious about and allowing that to become like an all-consuming disconnect mm-hmm. from the big picture, that's what we have to avoid if we're going to seek genuine understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think I will say that, like, the chapter, the time they were arguing, you know, this as it pertained to heresy, I think was prior to having like a formalized canon. I'm positive sure. It was before having a formalized canon. I mean, the Gospel of John was still circulated. I'm confident that they had the Gospel of John at that time. But yeah, I agree. Like, that's the hard part. You gotta pull these things all together. You gotta order them, and you gotta check them, verify them, pray about them, and then discuss them. You know, like it's big. You know,
it's too important to leave to just an assumption.
Yeah.
So the questions are good.
I agree. And even though we don't create them from nothing, we do reorder them from green beans to brown beans. And if you would like to support our meaningful conversations, the best way to do that would be to jump on the website, order a couple bags of coffee, and we roast them fresh, ship them to you. We just got a fresh lot in, fresh bag of coffee in, so it's pretty good right now. I'm really excited about it. We are temporarily, we have reduced it down to just the 9 rings. That's the most popular one. So we're just selling that bag for right now, or that coffee for right now. If orders come back up, then we'll add Fifth Love back in. But sticking to 9 rings, and that would be a great way to support. Other than that, you know, please like, share everything on social media. Help us, you know, get out there and get known. Got anything else on your brain there, man?
I mean, just one thing before we sign off officially. I just got to say, it's really good to have my main guy back over here nailing the transitions, because that was a top shelf connection there. Loved that one.
Dude, I felt that one hit me about like 5 minutes ago, and I don't have anything to write anything down with, and I've just kind of been repeating it over and over and over again. I'm like, I'm not going to drop this one. Worked. I'm not going to forget this one.
Nailed it.
Thank you, God, for revelation. All right, man. I guess with that, we will say
adieu.